Hey everyone, welcome back. Another episode of Talking Success. Hope you're enjoying the journey so far. We've had some amazing recordings and we've got some incredible guests lined up over the next few weeks before the end of the year. And we're going to start with a truly amazing guest today. Someone that I've been following on social media for a number of years. I'm delighted she can come on the show today and share the story of a very prevalent business here in South Africa and slightly wider than that as well, talking about all things super app. So if anyone's not heard of that sort of term super app, we're going to unravel that this morning or today and talk to you a little bit about what that means for users, for consumers, perhaps for merchants, for businesses and everything like that. So I'm delighted to welcome Miriam Kassim, who is the CEO of Financial and Digital Services at Vodacom Group. Vodacom, I'm sure, needs no introduction. And anyone sort of that's been following what VodaPay are doing and some of the other products that Vodacom have launched within financial services probably won't need an introduction to Miriam either. However, I think it's only right that I give Miriam the mic and she can talk to a little bit about who she is, her background. Miriam, I must admit, I did watch your very short promo video that you did a few weeks ago for the group, which is on the website. You've got a fascinating story. I know you've got a young family as well. So kudos to you for achieving what you have in your career today. But I'm going to stop talking and I'm going to hand over to you. If you can give a really quick intro in terms of who you are, what you do, and then I've got like a ton of questions for you. So over to you.
Sure. Thanks, Darren. And thank you for the platform. Really appreciate it. So yeah, I'm Miriam. I am an academic by nature, chartered accountant by profession, started off in the auditing, corporate finance, M&A space, spent quite a few years there understanding what it takes to create value in businesses, how do businesses increase in valuation, what it is that shareholders, stakeholders are looking for, and spent the formative years of my career doing that. Until I reached a point where I felt like I actually wanted to get my hands dirty and get involved in actually running a business and get away from the passive side and actually get into the active side. And that was shortly after I had my first baby. And I then decided to go off and do an MBA to solidify the business skills, which I felt that I was lacking at the time. And it was after completing my MBA that I decided to get more operational. I then worked for one of South Africa's largest short-term insurers, and that was my real step into operational financial services. And thereafter, got a knock on the door from Vodacom to help them start up this strategy in financial services that they were looking at, which is quite interesting for a telco wanting to go into fintech at the time. But being on the financial services side, we always knew that the mobile network operators were really just sleeping giants in the space of financial services, just given the massive amount of assets that a telco has. If you're able to take those assets and combine it with financial services solutions, the opportunities would just be amazing. And so, it's been 7 years at Vodacom, and it's been a great 7 years just having started up the business and launching solutions into so many different spaces of financial services, not just for consumers, but for small businesses as well.
Amazing.
So yeah, that's a little about me and my background. I'm outside of that, I'm a mom of two beautiful kids, a wife, a sister, a daughter, a friend, and all the rest that goes with being being a woman in corporate.
I was going to say, and a mentor as well. I know you do quite a bit of mentorship for other women who are looking to accelerate their careers as well. And again, kudos to you for doing that. Let's get started on the topic of sort of super apps and Vodacom as a group. Now, if we look sort of a bit further north, northeast. On the continent, we've got Kenya and we've got M-Pesa, which was developed by the group, Vodafone Group, I believe, in the UK, was, you know, had a big part of that. They've got a stake in Safaricom. Did the idea for digital financial services here in South Africa stem from M-Pesa, or is it very, very different? I just wanted to understand sort of how that fits within the group.
Yeah, I think that's a great question, Darren. And, you know, it's often asked as to whether the strategy in South Africa is very much the same as the international markets. And perhaps I can give a little bit of context. And I'll take you back to my final dissertation for my MBA course, which was actually done on strategy and business strategy. And one of the case studies that I decided to look at the time was the evolution of business strategy from one market to another. And at the time that I was completing my MBA, Vodacom had just launched their second attempt of M-Pesa in South Africa. Yeah. The first one was unsuccessful, unfortunately, and they were looking at a relaunch of the same product into South Africa, which subsequently also was unsuccessful. And I saw this as an opportunity to dig deeper and understand why is it that a very successful model like an M-Pesa in Kenya, Kenya being considered a third world country in Africa, would not be successful in a market like South Africa, which for all intents and purposes is really also considered to be third world country in Africa. Yeah. And I think the difference is that the South African financial services system is exceptionally has exceptionally evolved compared to what's available in some of the other African markets. I mean, M-Pesa is an amazing story. It really predates fintech. You know, it's customers having gone from keeping money under their mattresses directly to mobile banking and skipping bricks and mortar completely. And that's really just a need that's driven by the environment that you're in. And financial services was not that established in Kenya. And so M-Pesa came in as the forerunner and really just had an opportunity to capture market share to the extent that it has. Mm-hmm. In South Africa, however, the traditional banking system is very well developed. And so when trying to launch an M-Pesa type replica, it had to be thought about in a very different way for it to be successful, which was not completely done with the first two attempts. And so shortly after completing my dissertation, that's when I was headhunted for the role. I had to take a complete relook at what would a payment strategy look like in a market like South Africa that was just so evolved from a financial services point of view. And I really think that part of our success, or a big part of our success as Vodacom Financial Services in South Africa, has been focusing on launching very niche financial services products that have a real need in the market that we operate in. So, yeah, I think it's very important to understand the market context before looking at replication of services between markets.
And I think that's an important lesson for other entrepreneurs who may be listening to this podcast, is it's not just a cookie cutter approach. You can't take a product that or a service that works in one country and literally lift and shift it into another. Not only sort of regulatory hurdles that you need to navigate, but also, you know, different business models, different demographics, different LSMs, etc., different cultures. So I think that's a very valuable lesson. When we talk about the creation of a super app, and we're going to define that in a little bit, do you see payments being the underlying strategy, the underlying business model to then enable sort of bundling of additional services on top? Or, as we've seen in some other markets, the route to kind of creating this super app has either been through an Uber-like service or has been through sort of microloans and microfinance and creating that sort of mini economy and then bundling services on top. Do you feel that any of those three could work, again, depending on markets, or is payments kind of the crux of what mobile financial services needs to be embodied in?
Money is all around us, and we think about it more than almost every other aspect of our lives. But how can we make more of it, and what's our drive for building wealth beyond just the numbers in our bank account? Join us on the Make More podcast as our host Matt Heslin brings to you a dynamic lineup of experts in the world of investing, business, health, and beyond. Together, they unpack the secrets to not just surviving, but thriving in today's economy. It's about more than just wealth. It's about crafting life experiences, seizing opportunities, and building a legacy. Subscribe now to the Make More with Matt Heslin podcast and join us every week for new expert insights and inspiration.
I think in order to answer that question, Darren, it's really important to first take a step back and understand what is a super app.
Yeah,
and absolutely. How is it differentiated from just normal other e-commerce platforms that exist out there? And I think what's different with a super app is that a super app is, and you know, the way I like to describe it is exactly as one would be familiar with a physical shopping mall. A super app is exactly the same, just in a virtual space, and just in it's a massive, unlimited shopping mall which has products and services that you would typically find in any shopping mall. So just like you would walk into a shopping mall and you would have different stores, each carrying their own brands, each carrying their own products, each having their own custom experiences, the exact is the same in a super app. So what makes a super app successful, to your question? And if you look at the very successful super apps globally, they have all typically started on what we call one anchor use case.
Okay.
So what is that one anchor use case that is really driving foot count to your shopping mall every single day? And if possible, more than once a day or a few times a day, you know, and we like to refer to it as a toothbrush use case, you know, so if you brush your teeth 2 to 3 times a day, what is that toothbrush use case that's going to drive customers to your shopping mall 2 to 3 times a day? And once you've got that anchor use case in place, that's the point at which you're able to actually evolve into a super app, because you've just got the footfall into the mall, and then you're able to expose your customers to just so much more from a whole variety of products and services that could interest them. So if you look at, you know, to your point, WeChat, the anchor use case there was just person-to-person chat. If you look at Alipay, the anchor use case there was ironically an escrow account, which was money held in escrow to facilitate some transactions that were needed on the parent company Alibaba side. If you look at Paytm in India, it was started through mobile recharge. And so it's not always, I think payment is an enabler within the application, because that's the power of the application. You enter your credentials once, whether it's your login credentials, your payment credentials, your physical address for e-commerce delivery. And thereafter, everything is stored within a very safe and secure vault, which makes it a seamless customer experience every time they're wanting to transact within the super app.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for unpacking that. And then just to build on that in terms of a super app, you mentioned the shopping mall, which I get, but that there are other things on top that, again, would differentiate a super app from a banking app. So if I look at FNB, or if I look at Discovery, which may be a slightly different user case, you look at Nedbank, you look at all the main banks in South Africa in terms of the mobile application. I mean, I look on my FNB and I've got like 50, I don't know, different things I can do. I've probably looked at maybe a quarter of those that I actually use. The others, kind of, there isn't really much point for me. But when it comes to a super app, this goes beyond the world of financial services. This goes to more lifestyle. Is that correct? So you live your life in the app. Am I correct in saying that?
Absolutely correct, Darren. I think a real successful super app is an application. It's that one application that customers need on their mobile phone and could honestly do without the other 20 to 30, sometimes 100 other applications that you have on your phone. Mm. So it's really deemed to be that one-stop shop where you're able to do everything from wake up in the morning and do your fitness class from a mini application that's available within the app, or listen to your favorite music whilst getting ready for work, or order your coffee, pay for your coffee, etc. And so as your needs go through the day, your super app should have a mini application or something in that app that is able to assist you with conducting whatever it is that you need done for the day.
And it's clearly a very competitive space, across the continent, but globally as well. As you were talking about that sort of, you wake up in the morning and you've got your alarm and then you want to go and buy a coffee, then you want to do that. I suppose the competition for super apps isn't just other MNOs or banks or e-commerce companies, but perhaps even the OEMs themselves. So, the Googles and the tech companies, the Googles, the Apples of this world. I mean, the new update on the iPhone, it literally tells me what I should be doing at any moment of the day. Is it very competitive? Are there a number of different players all trying to kind of vie for this position of being the super app? Or does each one have their own demographic and their own sort of niche that they're looking to try and target?
I think that's, a very interesting question around looking at the hyperscalers like the Googles, Apples, etc. But then bringing it back to where successful super apps have been launched, I'd say that it's very much a use case driven reason or need that then opens up the opportunity to become a super app. So, anyone can really create a super app if they're if that's the strategy. But I think what you need to really think about is what is that anchor use case that you already possess within your current business model, and how are you going to use that to expand into a super app world? Because a super app world is underpinned by many different things. The first thing is just the strong technology that you need to really evolve into a super app. The super app is a massive point of integration for so many different service providers, so many different mini app merchants, as we like to call them. The core banking part of the super app itself is highly technical. So looking at the digital wallet and looking at the mobile store of value, that needs to be integrated into a banking partner if you're not a bank yourself. You've then got to work within the regulation of the market that you're looking to launch this within to ensure that from a financial services banking point of view, you're ticking all the boxes when it comes to regulatory compliance and what's needed there. Then you go into the, let's call it the e-commerce piece, which is then the integration of hundreds of different mini apps. And to make a super app successful, you want to have as many use cases as possible. So when talking about that, a day in the life of, what are those typical use cases that consumers would be looking for? And of course, the use cases that Miriam would be looking for be very different to the use cases that Darren would be looking for. There may be some overlap, but they are definitely going to be differences as well. So it becomes quite complex in terms of really trying to be that super app for everyone. But I think if you're able to get through the anchor use case part, you've already got the foot count into the shopping mall, then it just becomes add-ons on top of that. And then just to complete on that thought, I think one of the reasons why, in my opinion, mobile network operators in particular are the best placed to enter this world of the super app is when you look at the power of the access to data that mobile network operators have. It's just, it's really, I think, well ahead of so many other industries out there, specifically the traditional financial services industries and the traditional banks as an example. I mean, right now within the Vodacom big data team, we know something like we know over 12,000 things. We have about 12,000 data points and even more, because that was the last number I heard, and every time it's just growing. So we know, let's call it over 10,000 things on every single one of our customers. That's everything from the moment they wake up in the morning, the time they go to bed at night, the numbers of uninterrupted hours of sleep that they're getting, the location where they're sleeping every night, should they be sleeping there, the number of base stations that they travel through on a daily basis. I mean, if you think about these intricate pieces of data, it becomes exceptionally powerful in working with the very advanced AI technology that we see coming through today to really ensure that you're giving customers that personalized experience that understands who Miriam is or understand who Darren is, and then able to propose real products and solutions that's going to make their lives easier every day. And I think, you know, the data piece for me is really the biggest one. And I'll give you a very simple and quick example of where we use that, or maybe two quick examples of where we use that that really differentiates what we do in being a fintech in a telco versus, to your point, what some of the competitors could do. The first example is, let's take access to credit, mm-hmm. Okay? I mean, unsecured credit in any market is a challenge, especially in markets where financial inclusion is still very low. A lot of consumers are undocumented, as we call them, within the financial services industry. And that means never having had the opportunity to get access to credit, and so just don't even really have a credit score linked to their name. Within Vodacom being a telco, we've been able to use prepaid airtime consumption data to drive a correlation to your credit score. It's completely disruptive. Based on this model, we're now able to offer consumers unsecured loans anywhere from 3 rand to 200 rand. As an example. Now, these are really small numbers that traditional banks would struggle to do unsecured lending for. Yeah. We see the bad debt on this product being less than 3%, if that. And it's just a great product that gives customers convenience. So this is, again, utilizing the data that we have in the telco business to be an informant into something that can enable financial inclusion and give customers what they're looking for. A second example is, let's take the insurance business. So we have a fully fledged insurance company, and we offer insurance, short-term insurance on all types of devices. But one of the things that we've been able to crack is utilizing the data that consumers have traveling through base stations, as an example.
Okay.
We're able to draw a correlation between the number of base stations that you travel through and the propensity for you to claim on your mobile phone. And we've actually found that there's a positive correlation between the number of base stations that you travel through and your propensity to claim. So based on that, we're now able to price accordingly, which again makes this very competitive and gives us an edge when compared to the traditional competitors that we compete with out there.
I've got so many questions. I really have. Let's just stick with that one. I think as you were talking about the 10,000 plus data points that you have on sort of an individual, there may be some people listening to this that go, oh, that sounds a bit like Big Brother. Confidence can you give to people that actually this data is being used, as you've just very eloquently put, for good use, i.e. to lower premiums or to give people access to different sort of services? Is there some assurances that, you know, you as a group can give to consumers out there and the general public that, you know, this data is being used for good and isn't being, you know, shared with third parties and what have you?
Yeah, great question, Darren. Have you met our Poppy team? I think very, very good question and very relevant in today's day and age of, you know, data is very quickly becoming the new oil. And I think just as, you know, we've seen wars fought over oil, I think we're going to see wars fought over data. And the winners in this space are going to be those who have access to the the most amount of data, but also those who are able to utilize it in a way that really benefits the customer. So from a protection of data point of view, as you know, we have Vodafone as our holding company, or Vodacom. And between Vodafone and Vodacom, the amount of importance that is placed on, whether it's GDPR in the UK or POPI in South Africa, is absolutely uncontestable. So there's a very separate independent team that just looks after protection of customers' information. And every bit of information that is accessed is ensured that it's done with the relevant customer permissions, but also not used in a way that is where it can be seen to be not treating the customer fairly. So TCF is a really big thing for us, or for any malicious intent, which data can sometimes be abused for. So whereby there are instances where customer consent has not been received, of course, you know, that data is untouchable. Yeah. But data is used in two ways, and I do just want to clarify this. So on the one side, there's very much the, let's call it the data that is achieved, or the data that can be seen through bulk customer behavior. So not going down to Darren and what it is that Darren's doing.
Exactly.
But maybe saying, aggregated data. Exactly. So let's look at out of the 40 million plus customers that Vodacom has, let's look at the 1 million other people who look and feel like a Darren, and let's understand their customer behavior. And similarly, another case for a Miriam, and so it goes on. So the aggregated data also allows us to do a lot in the space of personalization. But then what we're also finding on the other side, which is now going down to individual data, is that with, you know, new generations and younger generations coming through, Darren, we're seeing that, they're actually not that, they don't have that much of an issue around organizations accessing their data. As long as you're using it in a way that is benefiting me as a consumer, as long as you're using it in a way that's pushing better benefits to me, I'm okay. I'm okay to tell you. And I mean, we see this with younger generations who will tell you what they had for breakfast on Facebook, or, on Instagram, what they spent the entire weekend doing, who they engaged with, et cetera. So I think this notion of protection around data, I believe, is changing with newer generations coming through as they're growing up in this age of social media. I see it with my kids. I mean, my 10-year-old son cannot understand why I don't allow him to post a video on Instagram, or why I don't allow him at this age to have an Insta account, because everyone's doing it. It's how they're growing up. So I do believe that it's going to become less of an issue from a privacy point of view going forward, but I do believe that organizations are going to have to put in a lot more rules around how do we protect that data.
Sure.
And how do we ensure that it is being used for the right reasons.
Thank you. I think it was a really important point just to cover off, so I appreciate your views on that. Now, in terms of services and products, let's just talk sort of financial products and services within the Vodacom, or the super app that you guys are building, VodaPay, however you want to call it. Actually, is there a name for the super app? Is there a name for the actual app?
It's VodaPay.
It is VodaPay. Okay, fine. So within VodaPay, and given the data and the access of data you've got, specifically around credit and credit scoring, do you see that there's a play, maybe it's already there, apologies if it is, and if it's not, it's a great idea, for things like BNPL? Do you see that being as a really good sort of opportunity, because you don't have to rely on traditional credit scoring, which doesn't, you know, reflect on people's credit reports when they're doing sort of inquiries. If you've got alternative data that you can use to credit score someone, or to get an understanding of their behaviours, can you then offer a BNPL solution on top of VodaPay? Is that in the pipework, or have I just let the cat out of the bag?
No, it's there already.
Oh, okay, there you go.
So,
okay.
This is one of the very early products we launched on the back of the credit scoring advantage that we have. So we have a mini application within VodaPay that is a vouchering application. So we've signed up with over 30 merchants in there, a lot of them being food retailers. So as an example, Eat Now, Pay Later, or you know, any other products that this is linked to, you're able to access it. Either purchase the voucher as a standalone product and get a discount. So let's say it's a Nando's voucher, as an example, you can purchase a voucher from Nando's and get a discount. Mm. So if it's a 100 Rand voucher, get it at 85 Rand or 90 Rand, whatever the discount is at the time.
Sure.
Or you're able to take an advance on that voucher and pay us back within 7, 14 or 21 days, depending what you select, completely interest-free. So again, we're really ensuring that we're making these things as cost-effective to the customer as possible. So you really don't have, you know, customers being overburdened with significant amount of interest or penalties or fees linked to a credit product.
So that's voucher-based. Is there a bit of friction there from the customer journey? Because they've, you know, rather than using one of the other sort of BNPLs where at the point of sale, you can say, yeah, I'm going to use, you know, X product or X fintech or Y fintech. Is there a bit of friction because people need to go and buy a voucher and there's a couple more sort of steps in that? Do you see sort of a future evolution that actually you can walk into a store, I can shop, you know, e-com online and I can go pay with VodaPay over, you know, 3 months or whatever it may be. Is that sort of the future, or is there a different business model around this?
Absolutely. And I think that would be the evolution of the buy now, pay later products that we have. So right now it's available in a voucher type format. And what this does is it actually gives the customer a lot more flexibility. So you're able to purchase a voucher on VodaPay, and you're able to redeem that voucher either in an online experience. So if you are then ordering something from that merchant, you're able to use that voucher when it comes to payment in the digital experience. But you're also able to present that voucher at your physical point of sale when you actually enter the store that you've purchased that voucher from. So it actually gives the customer flexibility, both combining the online and offline purchase experience with the voucher.
Mm.
So I think that will always stand, because you're always going to have customers who want to transact in an offline environment.
Yeah.
And just having that voucher makes it a lot easier. The point that you make around integration into the point of sale of those merchants becomes very important, and that becomes just another channel which could light up for us from a BNPL point of view. And that's definitely something that is on our roadmap and will be looked at. And then I think the third piece to be covered as well is upon the checkout journey of any e-commerce experience. Mm. And this again is something that is still within our pipeline. So here you want to ensure that when Darren has gone into VodaPay and purchased something from any of our mini app partners and has reached the payment page where he's now asked for payment, he's given a myriad of payment options from debit card, credit card, VodaPay store value, any type of rewards that we integrated into at the time. But then also buy now, pay later becomes a very important component of that, which then allows him just a new way or an alternative way to pay.
Fantastic. Right at the beginning, Miriam, you mentioned obviously the consumer part of group and what you do, and you also mentioned a business, sort of SME. What sort of products and services do you offer, financial services, do you offer to SMEs, maybe micro businesses here in South Africa? Again, is there a bundle type service offering that you give?
Yeah, the small business segment for us is an exceptionally important segment. And to be honest, it's a segment that as a team, we're just really passionate about. We really believe that the next wave of growth in the African continent is going to come from the enablement of SMMEs. And how do we ensure that with being the market dominant telco player in almost every market that we operate in, that we're continuously ahead of the curve of providing relevant products and services to our SMMEs who are already customers on the telco side, but who now require other types of products and solutions to enable their businesses. So this is an area that we spent a lot of time understanding and a lot of time developing different products for. So I'll maybe just talk about two quick products. Our VodaPay point of sale device is the first product that we launched really aggressively into the market, I'd say about 2 years ago. And it very much just gives SMMEs an, a device to be able to accept cashless payments through the tap of a card or the tap of a smartphone or any other contactless payment that that the customer chooses. And that's been growing exceptionally quickly. We have the advantage of the fact that these SMMEs are our customers already on the telco side. So in a way, it does decrease the cost of acquisition.
Yeah.
But also the power of the Vodacom brand just brings that trust to these types of products that we're launching within this space. It's almost, you know, a merchant doesn't have to think twice about, oh, but, you know, do I know who you are? Or if my customer pays me through this device, am I really going to get my money back? Yeah. The fact that it's associated with Vodacom gives us a lot of trust in the products that we were able to sell to customers, and that makes the journey a lot easier. So that's the products that we've launched. And within the payment piece for SMMEs, we've launched different devices for different types of merchants, everyone from a larger merchant to a sole proprietor. You know, we like to use the example of a plumber as an example, you know, who goes to a customer's home to repair something, needs to be paid. He or she does not require a fully fledged device that maybe a restaurant may require. So different types of devices for different types of SMMEs. And the really exciting part that we've linked to this is we've launched a merchant lending solution, which goes hand in hand with the payment solution. And what the lending solution does is, as an SMME, all you need to do is trade through our point of sale device for 3 to 4 months, and you are then proactively already pre-credit scored for already provisioned for a loan for your business. Depending on the turnover that goes through your business, you're already pre-scored for a loan, and the loan is then available for you to take to either improve your business or purchase additional stock, etc. And this has just disrupted the SMME credit lending space specifically, because the feedback that we're getting from merchants are, you know, it's just a painless process. We don't have to go and stand in long queues at banks with reams and reams of paperwork. You know, typically one of the requirements would be 3 years of audited financial statements.
Yeah,
and,
sure.
You know, as an ex-auditor myself, it's a really tough thing to ask young business entrepreneurs for 3 years of financial statements, let alone audited financial statements. It's, you know, so here we're trying to remove as much of the red tape as we can, but also taking the data that we have on these customers, because again, these SMMEs have been our customers at Vodacom for 15 to 20 years. So, you know, we've got so much data on them around their postpaid contract, their business contracts, etc. How do we take all of that information and ensure that today we're benefiting them with the data that we have on them to make their lives a lot easier? The really nice thing about the lending product as well is that there isn't a monthly big repayment that's needed from the small business owner. So as the customers continue to transact to the point of sale device, a certain percentage of each transaction is held back to pay off the loan. Now, this does a few things. The first thing it does is it removes the responsibility on the SMME to save towards a monthly repayment,
yeah,
which decreases the credit risk significantly for that SMME, and just allows them to obtain access to credit at affordable rates, and also just allows them to grow their business in a very seamless, simple customer experience.
It's fantastic. You mentioned a few times, and this is where my kind of heads at, the ecosystem. You mentioned that there are sort of lots of different players within VodaPay. Obviously, you've got the scheme, so you know you can accept payments, Visa, MasterCard, etc. I would imagine, please correct me if I'm wrong, you have different banking partners, so there's settlement to individuals' bank accounts and businesses, merchants' bank accounts. where else do you see opportunities for the ecosystem to grow? Bit of a leading question, because I'd like to explore any partnerships, opportunities with fintechs. So fintechs operating in South Africa who may have something really innovative, something that you know they've had some really good adoption on, but they want to get some scale. Is the group open to partnerships with fintechs, or is it very much, no, we build things in-house and we build our in-house kind of ecosystem?
The future, Darren, in my opinion, is all about partnerships. I really believe that the days of doing business where corporates and organizations or any type of, whether you're a technology company or a retail company or whatever industry you're operating in, the days of trying to do everything yourself are over, in my opinion. I really believe that the space is evolving so quickly that you're never going to be cutting edge unless you have a partnership mindset and a partnership approach. Mm. There's just too much to try and do everything yourself. And this is why within our business, we are strong advocates of partnerships. So wherever there are young fintechs relevant to our business in this case, or even to the broader telco, Vodacom telco business, where there are young companies who have developed products and services in their garages or in their homes, coding at their personal laptops, where they believe that it's something that could enhance the ecosystem or make contribute to a cost saving on the telco side, as an example, or contribute to an additional revenue use case. I'd say corporates should be very open to those types of opportunities because you just cannot do everything yourself and you just never have enough of, whether it's a CapEx budget or a marketing budget to, or even just having enough people within the organization to be able to do everything that we'd like to do. It's just not possible given the very quick evolving trends that's happening within the industry right now. So we already work with a lot of partners integrated into the VodaPay app already, but also integrated into our other lines of businesses, which are separate to the VodaPay super app. And so I'd like to use this as an opportunity to invite fintechs who have perhaps watched this podcast, listened to this podcast, and knowing the strategy that we're on and the journey that we're on, believe that they have a product or service that could enable the ecosystem. Absolutely, always happy to look at the solutions and see if there's a way to work together.
Thank you. And how should people get in touch with your team or yourself? Is there like a partnerships department, or should they sort of look you up on LinkedIn? What's the best route?
Yeah, I think today with so many different channels, it's so easy to reach people. But yeah, I do have a standalone partnerships team, okay, within my portfolio. So perhaps we could share the contact details somehow, Darren, linked to this Absolutely. Podcast. And happy for people to make contact through that channel.
Yeah, well, if anyone's watching on YouTube, they're down there. And if you're listening on an audio podcast, then they'll be in the description. So we'll put the contact details there. Miriam, before I let you go, I do have one last question for you. And this is a question that I heard, where are we now? Probably 15, maybe 16 years ago. I was, just to paint the picture, I was living in the UAE, and it was just before a big event, and we were invited to the British ambassador's residence in Abu Dhabi. And we had a group of telco experts from regional telecoms operators in this reception, and we did a very small panel. And one of the questions that has always stuck with me was, when does a telco become a bank? Okay, and this question was posed like 16 years ago. This was before fintech was fintech and became sort of this sexy buzzword. Do you see MNOs evolving into some sort of bank? Maybe not the banks that we know now, maybe some sort of digital bank, neobank, or do you see that not really being the right type of business model. And again, it's more of a gateway into financial services. And I appreciate if you're going to answer this, it's probably your views rather than the group's views. But I'd love to get your view on it.
Yeah, I think this is a very popular question that's been posed many times, I think, to various different telco stakeholders. I know our CEO gets it a lot of times as well. And I think the real answer is it totally depends, Darren, because, again, you know, becoming a fully fledged bank comes with an exorbitant amount of regulation and compliance and costs, right? And so in understanding the proposition that the telco, through their fintech, are wanting to provide in that specific market, it becomes very important to understand what is it that you're wanting to do in that market, what products are you looking to launch in that market, and do you need to necessarily be a bank to be able to do that? If you take our model in South Africa, to be honest, I don't believe that we need to be a bank. You know, it's quite ironic because if you think about telcos, there's this sort of notion that, you know, with the OTT players coming in, the telcos had become a little bit of the dumb pipe and people playing on top of the telcos or the OTTs playing on top of the telcos. I think the same thing is the case in the space of fintech, in that, you know, leave the regulation and the compliance to the banks, leave them to do what they know they do best. And how do we play on top of that ecosystem in a way that's very smart, in a way that's very sexy, in a way that creates an amazing customer experience and really starts to disrupt? And, you know, if you look at the businesses that we have right now, there are some where we have chosen to be regulated entities. So if you take our insurance business, we're a fully regulated entity. We have a long-term license and a short-term license. Sure. If you take our credit or lending part of the business, there we've made a very clear choice for now to not be a credit provider. So we do not take any of that risk on our own balance sheet. We outsource that and work with partners. And then similarly in the payment space as well, you know, we partner with banks where we need to ensure that we're fully compliant with still being able to play nicely over the top and still, you know, innovate and give customers what they're looking for. So, yeah, I think it really depends on the market that you're looking at, the product set that you're looking to launch, and what the regulatory requirements are asking for in that space.
Wonderful. Thank you. I've thoroughly enjoyed this session. Thank you very, very much for your time. I know we had a couple of glitches when we first started, but we've got those sorted out. Miriam, if people want to follow you, where are you most active? Is it LinkedIn or Twitter X or Instagram or Threads or TikTok?
Most active on LinkedIn. Most active on LinkedIn. I'm being urged every day by my 10-year-old to start to become more active on Instagram, and he's even now promised to assist me to create content to post onto Instagram. He's like, "Mom, how can you not be posting content on Instagram? Like, that's where everyone is." But for now, LinkedIn is probably the best.
If we search for you on TikTok, we can't do you find you doing any sort of dance moves and mimicking sort of other people and what have you, no? Not yet.
No, definitely not on TikTok.
You'd be surprised. Anyway, that's one for another day. Miriam, thank you so much. I'd love to maybe do a follow-up in a while's time. There was a few other topics that I know we didn't get time for today. I'd love to get your views on things like CBDCs and the play for crypto and how that fits into the Super App and VodaPay, whether there's some sort of plans. But that's one for another day. Thank you so very much. Thank you to your team as well for facilitating this and helping us get this recorded. And I wish you all the very best. If we don't speak before, have a lovely Christmas. I can't believe I'm saying that. It's September. But have a lovely new year. And hopefully we'll meet in person sometime in the near future.
Great. Thanks, Darren. Thanks for inviting me onto this podcast. It's been such a pleasure chatting to you. And hope people find it useful, and very happy to chat again. And yeah, I can't believe it's almost time for for Christmas looming very quickly. The year has just flown by. So if I don't speak to you before, all the very best for the end of the year. And but I definitely hope we can chat again soon.
Wonderful. Thanks so much. Take care.
Okay. Cheers, Darren.